Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show. This is Bradley J filling in for Jeff, who is gallivanting about the country right now. And appreciate the opportunity to be with you, having a good time. This is day two of two. Maybe Jeff won't send me to Buck's Pocket. We'll see how it goes. Have another text on the text line. Democrats basically set up Sessions because of their collusion hoax mess. There's no question that it was a very orchestrated, deliberate scheme, because Sessions was such a strong defender of the president to get him to recuse. And I hope that maybe one day we'll learn more about that publicly. So just a minute ago, we had some, I guess this is breaking news here. We had Trump truth out that, do you remember Rod Bray? He's the Indiana president of the state Senate who bucked President Trump on redistricting. Well, we have Trump saying, I'm pleased to announce that the man who so foolishly led the Indiana state Senate, with almost every candidate losing their race, many of them in office for years, will not be seeking re-election as Senate president because he wouldn't have had a chance to be elected. Interesting there. Rod Bray, Roderick Bray, I mean, he essentially killed Trump's efforts to capture two of these Democrat seats in Indiana that are gerrymandered specifically for Democrats. Trump spent significant time and effort. His team spent money in trying to get the state legislatures and the governor. He finally convinced Governor Braun to go along with it. To reverse that gerrymandering in the district that gave two seats to Democrats, and Rod Bray killed it. The way that they do elections in Indiana is different than it is here in Alabama. But Trump targeted seven of those state senators who had voted against redistricting earlier this year in primaries. He targeted seven of them, and I believe he beat five of them. One of them just came down to, I think, like two votes, and unfortunately the incumbent won. But that, there was a big question at the time, is this a smart use of Trump's time and the Trump administration's money? But it's a good question. I think that it was a smart use. I mean, look, we've talked a lot. I mean, the Republican Party, the direction of the Republican Party isn't going to change unless you change the people who are actually elected. I think it sent a strong message, and there needs to be some turnover. You know, it's not just about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and Joes as well. So Trump taking a victory lap there, as I think he should, that's very Trump. He said, better yet would be if Rod Bray would resign from office completely, but he will be met by us at the Indiana polls. Roderick Bray should be ashamed of himself for costing our country, mainly the Republican Party, two U.S. House seats, and for costing all of his colleagues who went along with him an election loss. Isn't it amazing how politics works? Trump just being very Trump, gloating with that post. Good for him. There's a scout for President Trump, and I'm sure this guy will say that he was not planning on running for a re-election. That's fine, whatever. My experience seems to be that most of these guys don't willingly ride off into the sunset. I think that your Tom Tillis's of the world would have continued running for office if they would have seen a path to re-election. But a scout for President Trump this morning. We talked earlier about John Cornyn, to kind of circle back to that. President Trump also truthed out this morning about Cornyn. And look, Cornyn and his partner in crime, Tom Tillis, are holding up the nomination of acting AG Todd Blanche to be the Attorney General in his own right, even though they say that he's a great nominee, they support him, he's qualified, and he's doing a great job. They're holding it up using their senatorial prerogative. They're holding up his confirm, or at least his recommendation from the committee to go before the full Senate, because of the weaponization fund. Trump truthed out today that he said Cornyn never had a problem with the so-called fund, which will not benefit me, but rather the great American patriots who were hunted down like dogs and whose lives were unfairly and illegally destroyed by the crooked Joe Biden administration. Trump goes on to say that Cornyn only began to oppose this fund that was awarded to the government, and Trump could claim this for himself, but he wanted it to go towards this fund for people who had been targeted by the government. Trump doesn't even need any new statutory authority to do this. President Obama use this. I believe that Biden did as well. They just used it as a slush fund for their supporters. But Trump goes on to say that Cornyn is only adopting this tack because Trump helped take him out after he endorsed his opponent in the primary, Ken Paxton, who, how badly did he beat Cornyn in the primary? 28 points. It is just a different day now, where a senator can lose a primary by 28 points. We talked with Will Hampson earlier in the program about how, look, you don't have to raise the kind of money that you used to win these races. Money still matters, but Cornyn and his allies spent over $100 million by some estimates. It was at the very least into the 70s, just in the, I believe that was in the primary. That was before the runoff. And Paxton still whooped him by 28 points? I mean, that is just an absolute shellacking. And in the primary, before the runoff, Paxton had only raised or spent, I believe it was about a little over $4 million. It was about $4.5 million. Will Hampson talked about authenticity and being on the side of the voters. At the time, after that I believe it was after the Trump made his endorsement. So it was during the runoff, and it was before the actual runoff election. So Paxton hadn't won yet. But Nick Gilbertson, our Breitbart News White House correspondent, who we had on the program yesterday to share some insights into how that the White House pool process works and what it's like being in the Oval Office and talking with Trump and having to work with some of these establishment media types, the dynamics there. But Nick Gilbertson, the day after Trump made his endorsement of Paxton, Nick asked J.D. Vance in the White House briefing room what kind of a message that endorsement sent to not just the people of Texas or John Cornyn, but to other, not just other establishment politicians, but also any potential challengers, folks who might be on the fence thinking about challenging some of these establishment politicians. JD laid it all out. He made it very clear, look, this is a different day and age, and the Trump administration, or not the administration, but President Trump and his allies are going to side with the politicians who remember who sent them to Washington. And if you're a politician who's up in Washington and isn't working for those voters who's forgotten that, well, then President Trump's not going to stand behind you. Just, I mean, JD laid it all out there in a very pointed statement to Cornyn. So I understand why Cornyn is upset, but brother, you played yourself. You did it to yourself. I don't think that we have heard the last of some of Cornyn's corruption. I think that some of the information on Cornyn that may have come out in that runoff did not come out just because the polling showed that he was going to lose so overwhelmingly to Attorney General Paxton. But the way that Cornyn is behaving himself right now, where he is just kicking up sand on his way out. I mean, the Senate is only going to be in session a few more weeks this year. They're in session next week before their 5-week vacation. Wouldn't it be nice to have a 5-week vacation? That's a Jeff Poor vacation right there. But wouldn't it be nice to have a 5-week vacation like the Senate? But it's only going to be in session a few more weeks of the year. They're going to come back after August recess. They'll be in for a couple weeks to knock out stuff, and then they're going to go on their other traditional vacation that they take before the actual election day. And then will they be in the lame duck period between elections and when the new Congress actually starts? They'll be in for a couple of weeks. That's when they usually try to do the stuff that they don't want to do before election day, because they don't want to be held accountable to the voters. But look, if Cornyn keeps kicking up dust on his way out like this, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the negative stories about Cornyn and his past and how he's monetized his Senate career, how his family has monetized it, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the stories that folks maybe held off on because Paxton wanted to try to bring in Cornyn voters to his camp for the general election, some of that may start leaking out. That's something to keep an eye on. We talked earlier in the program about the NRSC. I don't like that the NRSC is spending money in Ohio. I think that it would be a better course of action to actually get John Husted off his tail and actually get out there and campaign in Ohio. Sherrod Brown, look, he just got beat 2 years ago by Bernie Moreno, who is one of our excellent new senators. There's just the new class of senators are just so far removed from the Shelby types, from the John Cornyn types. But Moreno ran a very tough race against Brown. Moreno had a lot going for him. A lot of the establishment Republicans weren't lifting a finger for Moreno. Even the NRSC didn't help him like they should have. But Moreno beat Sherrod Brown, the Democrat. He's back. He's running against Husted. He's got that stink of defeat on him, and he shouldn't have a chance in Ohio as someone who just lost. He shouldn't have a chance in that Senate race. But Husted isn't getting out campaigning, and the NRSC has a habit of propping up these types of candidates with scarce dollars when these candidates aren't doing their work. I think of Nebraska last year. I can't even remember her name, which is an indictment on her, but it wasn't until the final weeks that she got out and campaigned against Dan Osborne, who's a Democrat running as an independent. He's now running again because he outperformed in the race last year. He's running for Senate in Nebraska again as an independent. This time he's running against Pete Ricketts, another vestige of Republican Party past, who's not a very strong candidate. He got into a bit of a kerfuffle yesterday with TMZ. TMZ, of course, started out as focusing on Hollywood, but they ended up they now have a DC bureau, and they're kind of fun to watch. We love them at Breitbart. They don't pay attention to the old school ways of reporting. They'll confront these people. But Pete Ricketts was getting asked questions by a TMZ reporter, and he called the Capitol Police over to hold these guys off. Just unbelievable, unbelievable. This is who the modern Republican Party, or at least the old Republican Party, is that we're trying to replace. We'll be right back with a lot more on the Jeff Poor Show. And offers coming over the phone. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. It's Bradley J. A few more minutes before our next guest. Let's go to the text line. Paul says, I think the deep state controls. I believe just enough Republicans see the U.S. Senate as an example. The deep state is definitely not exclusively Democrats. There's no question about it. They're very much Republicans who are part of it. Some of these guys I know, they're primarily anti-Trump Republicans who are career employees at the Department of Justice or whoever, who just they have this warped view of how the government should operate, where these professional bureaucrats know best, know better than elected officials, know better than presidents, and that they should have outsized power. There are different explanations or theories, perhaps, as to why these people think this, but I don't think it's consistent with how the founders framed our government. But there's definitely, you mentioned, Paul, the U.S. Senate. I mean, look, the founders created the Senate as they did for a reason, with its 6-year terms that are staggered, so that you can never throw all 100 out at a time. You can only a third or ever before the voters at a time. It's supposed to be somewhat insulated from public opinion. But the way these senators work now, well, for one thing, they used to be appointed by the state legislatures and not popularly elected. So the kind of senators we have created a whole different kind of dynamic now, different governing philosophy. There are a lot of problems with the United States Senate. The old saw is every United States senator looks in the mirror and sees a president. That's certainly a big problem. Many of them are just using it as a springboard to even greater power. But so many of these folks, and this is a tale as old as the Republic, or at least nearly so, when they see a president, they see a president not as someone they have to work with, but as someone they just have to outlast. And in 4 years or 8 years, the president will be gone and the senator will still be in place and have their little fiefdom. Even if, again, we've said earlier, but there's senators first and Americans second, and that's a big problem. Mommy Issues texted in, how expletive pathetic must you be to think Trump's and his own family should have immunity from his taxes or giving money to January 6th traitors? Ooh, real insightful there. So I have a friend who was arrested after January 6th. I mean, he's a well-known guy on the internet. They call him the lectern guy, good family man, nice fella, who was one of the first to plead guilty. And part of the reason he did it is because his attorneys told him, look, they are going to the Biden administration is not going to go after any other criminals. They are going to go after these guys and make an example of you, charge you with things that maybe are is far beyond anything that you did by trespassing. I mean, this guy carried a lectern a few feet. He was basically a furniture mover, and he had to plead guilty and do a few weeks, a couple months in jail because he was there with hundreds of thousands of other people. And if you've seen the footage, there were cops who were actually moving the fencing and waving them in. These people don't know the procedure. Many of the people there didn't know the procedures for getting in the Capitol. You see they were there. They were waved in by a cop. Yeah, there was some activities going on there that shouldn't have happened. But the fact that there was an overzealous prosecution, government-wide effort going after some of these folks, some of these old grandmas and folks who moved to podium left and right, I mean, that's ridiculous. So the fact that other presidents have used this fund before, I doubt that this texter, Mommy Issues, was too critical of President Obama when he did that. And I'm sure that he was very happy for our federal government, the FBI, the DOJ, to not go after these criminals who are ransacking our communities, but spend all their time raiding Melania's panty drawer. Oof. Wild times. We'll be back after this with the Jeff Poor Show.
He said, you don't have to call me Mr. The whole world called me Hank. said, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing?
Show. This is Bradley J filling in for Jeff today. We're about halfway home here. In some Alabama news, Congressman Mike Rogers from our own great state, he has been the top Republican on the House Armed Services Committee. He's coming up now at the end of, I believe, his six-year term. Now, the way that things happen in the House, with Republicans at least, Republicans only you get 6 years in the House to lead a committee. After that, your time is up, and it's time to give up the ghost, let somebody else have a turn. There are a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes members of Congress can get a waiver to extend their tenure atop a committee for another 2 years. There are different reasons why they might do that. Maybe a member of Congress has a particular level of expertise, or maybe nobody else wants it, as to some of these lesser committees. Maybe there's no one else who has the fundraising heft, which, let's be honest, that's one of the primary qualifications for these House Republicans when they go before the steering committee, and they court the members of the steering committee to be to win one of these committee gavels, to be a chairman or the ranking member. But Mike Rogers is seeking a waiver, reportedly, to stay atop the House Armed Services Committee for another 2 years. I mean, look, there are some benefits to having somebody from Alabama lead that committee. It's good for, like, the Anniston Army Depot, for these other installations that we have across the country. I mean, look. I've got friends over there, but I mean, there's no question that Mike is one of these old school type of establishment Republicans. I mean, his area of focus, as it should be for a chairman, is very much on these armed services type issues. I mean, he's one of these guys who has, you know, locked arms with the Joe Wilsons and these others of the world. Just, you know, Ukraine, crank up military spending, crank up, they call it defense spending. I mean, it's not defense spending when they call it the Defense Authorization Act, but we're manufacturing all of these arms to ship overseas. I don't know if defense is accurate, but I mean, look, that's who Rogers is. He's not shy about it. I mean, the guy, probably more so than any member of Congress, Mike Rogers absolutely loathes the Freedom Caucus. And look, there are valid members for not liking some of the approaches that the Freedom Caucus takes. It's not a monolith by any means. There's, I don't know, 35 or 40 members of the Freedom Caucus now, and there aren't any two who see eye to eye on everything. But interesting that Rogers is seeking to stay atop that committee for another term. I know there'd been a lot of speculation in Washington and Alabama that he was gonna ride off into the sunset after his time leading the committee was done, which is something that many other members of Congress do. I mean, it's not something that most of them look upon with glee, to go from chairing a powerful committee and having these 50 plus member staffs and calling all these shots to just go into being another backbencher. Even if you're a senior member, if you don't have a committee gavel, you know, your ability to influence things is limited. But it will be, I don't think we will know until the end of the year whether or not he will be granted a waiver. I know that Brian Mast of Florida had been mentioned as a name to watch, seeking to take over for Rodgers. There's some others, I think David Rauser from North Carolina, but we'll see if Mike can hold on to it and get that waiver. The way that the steering committee works, now the steering committee in the House determines who will, not only who will lead all of these committees, who will be the top Republican, but also who actually sits on these committees. There is, and it's Washington at its most Washington. It is some smoke-filled backroom type of goings-on. All of these members who want to lead these committees, there's, I don't know, 26 or 27 or so members of it. It's all the Republican leadership. There are folks from different regions of the country. Different regions get a representative on the committee. I think the freshman class gets a member, the sophomore class, but and there's some other at-large members. I think that the speaker gets to choose one or two. The speaker himself has like three or five votes, and then I think the majority leader has two or three votes. And he might get to appoint someone as well. But, I mean, it's very smoke-filled rooms. There is so much work that goes in to getting this committee gavel. Number one, you have to donate a lot of money to the NRCC. So these members of Congress who, I mean, you can only get, what is it, a little over $5,000-$6,000 at a time from each, because, you know, there are limits on raising money. But they work to gain all this money, and then they just, to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, for some of these prime, like the Appropriations Committee, some of these prime purchases, you have to donate even more of this money that is not yours. It is for your campaign, but you give it to the NRCC as a token of goodwill, so that leadership can then consider your request to sit atop these committees. Once the steering committee determines who leads all of these committees, and again, part of the consideration when they choose who will be committee chairman is how well these folks are at going out and raising money. It's not necessarily if you're an expert on the issues. They want somebody who's going to be a good team player, and they want somebody who's going to continue to raise money to elect more Republicans. I get it. You want Republicans. If you're a Republican, you want more Republican members. But I mean, that leads to whole other issues in the House and the Senate. Democrats want power to use it. Republicans want power because they just like being in Washington too often. I'm not saying that Mike Rogers or, I mean, Mike Rogers definitely has an agenda that he's pushing. I'm not saying that at all, but for a lot of these members of Congress, they just like being up there, and yeah, they might have, you know, their opinions or convictions on this, that, or the other, but a lot of them just truly enjoy being up there. It's intoxicating. Sam Rayburn, who one of the House office buildings is named after, his advice to freshman members of Congress who wanted to rise the ladder and gain power and influence, he'd tell them, if you want to go along, get along. And that's the way things were for the longest time, and still is in many regards. If you want to climb that ladder, you got to raise money. You got to donate that money from your campaign to others. You got to be a good team player. And that will help you with your committee assignments. And if you ever do want to wait your turn and be a committee chairman or be the ranking member, well, you got to go along to get along. Unfortunately, I mean, look, that's politics. That's how things work. But it too often results in the people who gain the power not necessarily wanting that power for the best reasons. Look, that's politics. That's representative democracy. What was it, Churchill, who said democracy is the worst form of government except all the others? It's messy. It's not pretty. You look north across the Capitol from the House to the Senate. I was thinking about the NRSC earlier with Lisa Murkowski, who has been such a thorn in Trump's side. She's not terribly popular in her home state of Alaska, at least not in Republican circles. But let me tell you this story just to show how the NRSC is so often operating against the interest of conservatives or even Republicans. In 2012, I believe it was, 2010 or 2012, Lisa Murkowski lost her primary. She lost the Republican primary. She was an incumbent. She lost to a fellow named Joe Miller. This was in the Tea Party years when a lot of these longtime folks, it was very much a throw the bums out type of movement that was being led by the Peter Schweitzers of the world, my colleague at Breitbart, Peter Schweitzer. There was very much that rising angst against those establishment type politicians who were using their office just for their own purposes and lost sight of who sent them there. Lisa Murkowski, after she lost her primary, did the NRSC get behind the Republican nominee in the state? Of course not. They supported the incumbent, Lisa Murkowski, who was running a general election write-in campaign. Of course, it's just common sense, to win that write-in campaign, she was going to have to win a bunch of Democrat votes. A bunch of Democrats were going to have to write in Lisa Murkowski for her to emerge atop that three-way race between the Republican nominee and the Democrat nominee and the write-in candidate, Lisa Murkowski. Instead of actually working to elect Republicans against Democrats in some of these other states around the country, the NRSC put all of its resources behind Lisa Murkowski. Now, is there anyone who can say that Lisa Murkowski has been a benefit to the Republican Party since then? That's a difficult argument to make. I'm sure that there are those who would make it, oh, she's been a moderating influence. And no, she has. I mean, she's Democrats' favorite Republican, much more so than a Susan Collins who voted for Kavanaugh. Murkowski, every step of the way, has voted against the interest of conservatives of the base of her own party. Actually, I would never say where it is, but I know where she lives in Washington, and was walking by her house the other day on a call, just gallivanting around as I like to do when you got your headphones in listening to folks. There was some guy, she was on her sidewalk, there was some guy in a bucket hat who was talking with her, and they were going back and forth, and I was trying to kind of listen, and he was raving against these, I forget the terminology he used, crazy Republicans or something, and she was just nodding her head and agreeing, and said something to the effect of, this is what she this is what she's up against. But that's her mindset. She's up against Republicans. She's up against Trump and Trumpism. She doesn't see herself as up against as fighting the Democrats. With everything that the Democrat Party is doing, the transformation they're seeking in our government and our nation, we still have Republicans who don't see them as the enemy, but who see the leaders of their own party and the people, the base of their own party, as the enemy. I mean, it's not even shocking, but that's who we're up against. Too often, Republicans are their own biggest enemy. But yeah, the NRSC, thank you for Lisa Murkowski. I saw an interesting poll this morning about the big four, the four leaders in Congress of the two parties, about their popularity. All four of them are underwater. And I get it. Sometimes these leaders have to take the slings and arrows for their members, the members of their conferences and their caucuses. Mike Johnson was 14 points underwater. Thune was 14 points underwater. Hakeem Jeffries was 16 points underwater. Chuck Schumer, 29 points underwater. just unbelievable. I mean, his party has moved so quickly, and Chuck Schumer is seen as the face of that old style Democrat who was willing to get along with the business interest and those chamber Republicans. And I mean, that was just who Chuck Schumer was for so long. And look, he doesn't have a conviction. There's an old saying in Washington that the most dangerous place to be is in between Chuck Schumer and a camera. I mean, the guy just, I mean, he, to his credit, he loves his job. He loves politicking. Man, he goes into it full bore. But the party has moved so far to the left, and there's only so much that he can fake. I will note that McConnell's even further underwater than Chuck Schumer. Of course, McConnell isn't a leader anymore. But McConnell, how many days has it been since he's been seen? I mean, his office has published those or sent out those two photos of him. Every couple of weeks, they send a proof of life photo with the day's paper in front of him, the sports section or whatever. But I think that he's trying to make it four more days. Look, after August 3rd, if that Senate seat opens up after August 3rd, the governor won't be able to appoint a replacement. And there are all kinds of machinations there, and Kentucky has actually passed some state laws which limit who the Democrat governor can appoint to that seat. But man, McConnell's just holding on. I don't think he cares much about what most people think about him. That he's made that very clear throughout his career, but whew, this is not the way I would want to be remembered. We'll be right back on the Jeff Moore Show. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show. This is Bradley J. We're wrapping up hour number two. We'd love to hear from you. The text line is 251-343-0106. Again, that's 251-343-0106. We have Michael texting in. Have you seen the most recent proof of life photo with a photo of Mitch McConnell and his doting wife, Elaine Chao, holding him up in what appears to be a Ninja Turtle parka? All these AI photos of these proof of life photos McConnell sent, and just some really good stuff. It seems like McConnell is just almost mocking us, or at least his family or his team is mocking us with these photos. I mean, just sticking it in the eye, saying, you know, we can do whatever we want. We have Gene, who texted in. Trump is not a Republican. McCain was a Republican. Look, I don't think there's any doubt that McCain was a much better fit for that old Republican Party. Look, the Republican Party, look, politics is and culture and everything, they're dynamic. So many of these politicians today, we were talking earlier about these armed services style politicians. The boogeyman under their beds are the same enemies from the 80s, from the Reagan years. The world has changed. There are different threats. There are different threats abroad. There are different threats at home. The Democrats that we're fighting are far different now, partly due or significantly due to immigration. So Republicans have to change too. There's no question that Trump has changed the makeup of the party. The tent is, I believe, a little bit bigger, but it's different constituent parts. It's the coalitions that are Republicans are definitely different than the party that that had nominated McCain. There's no question about it. I think that there's been a shedding of some of the remnants and, you know, these coastal elites of the party, these chamber of commerce types. That's an oversimplification, but who had supported Republicans in the past. Again, oversimplifying a bit, but I think that we exchanged some of those types, some of the money, the country club types with blue collar working Americans. And I think that the tent is much bigger because of that. Look, McCain, and I worked in the Senate for a long time alongside McCain. McCain used the Senate to run for president. McCain, and I know that the Schumers of the world try to have talked about renaming like the Russell Senate office building after McCain. McCain wasn't even popular amongst his colleagues. He was kind of a jerk. He didn't have that collegial Senate type of working relationship with his colleagues. He used his Senate perch to run for president. That was what he always wanted to do. And then once it became clear that he wasn't going to get it, he used it basically it was almost ludicrous the extent. If you looked at the Senate Armed Services Committee hearings that he chaired after he lost his race for his last run for president, it was just basically, look at all of my famous friends. He was bringing them all in as witnesses. I mean, he was just seeking fame. And then, of course, in his final days, he just wanted to take out the man who he saw is taking the party in a different direction from the one he envisioned. But that was John McCain. That's about the nicest thing I can say about John McCain. We'll be right back after this on the Jeff Moore Show.